Welcome into Baltimore Sports Today, the daily podcast from the Baltimore Sports Report Network. It's episode 330 for Tuesday, November 8th, 2016. I'm Zach Wilt from BaltimoreSportsReport.com. Joined as always by my good pal, Jabby Burns. How are you, Jab?
I'm doing okay, Zach. Happy Election Tuesday. And when I say that, I mean go out and vote, and then let's never talk about this ever again.
There's nothing happy about this one. Everybody's just miserable.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's sort of how I feel. Patrick, let's welcome Patrick Guthrie in. Yeah. How are you, Patrick?
I'm good. I'm kind of starting to get back into basketball and I guess a little bit of hockey because NHL Network. But it took me a little while to get over baseball season being over. So I'm happy to get back on here and talk about baseball like it never ended with you guys.
It's a little tough to go from one of the most exciting game sevens I've ever seen to, talking about whether Manny Machado is going to win a gold glove. You go full on slam the brakes mode in baseball when it comes to leaving behind a Cubs Indians World Series. That's totally nuts in my opinion, especially when you look at the free agent list, Patrick, and it's like Cespedes is exciting, I'm sure, especially for you as a Mets fan, but like after that, I don't know. There's not a ton of real exciting names, especially if you're in the starting pitching market.
It's not even really exciting for Cespedes. It's just like, please God, let us re-sign Cespedes. I'm not like excited about it. I'm just kind of like over here really hoping that happens. It's not like he's, I still consider him a part of the Mets. Like I still consider him on the Mets until he's not, even though I know he's now free agent. But if they don't get him back, I'll be crushed.
Well, good luck. I hope for your sake you're not crushed.
Was there any guys out there that got QOs that you guys felt were you surprised by any of the guys that got them?
Orioles standpoint, like we were mentioning, Jab, I obviously was not surprised that Mark Trumbo got a qualifying offer. And then, we mentioned yesterday that I thought there was about a 50-50 chance that Matt Wieters would. So I guess I by default cannot be surprised that Wieters did not receive a qualifying offer.
Yeah, I heard from within some couple people I talked to yesterday that it was kind of talked about a little bit more in the media that it was going to be a potential, but there was actually never a chance that the Orioles were going to give Wieters an offer. And the reason why, Patrick, from what people were telling me, was he was hoping that they were going to give him one because he was going to take it.
Yeah.
Which I find interesting.
Yeah, there's a couple guys yesterday that I was surprised didn't get qualifying offers. I know the injury to Wilson Ramos was big at the end of the year, and he won't be back for a couple months. Nats didn't give him a qualifying offer. He's been there forever. Mike Napoli did not get a qualifying offer. Yeah. So I found that really interesting. Yeah, party at Naps somewhere. I guess it'll be a different place now.
He sounds like Screams Oriole to me. later in his career, you know what I mean? Just another guy that can get hot at certain times, hits home runs, and strikes out a lot. Perfect Oriole.
Yeah, right. That's exactly what they need. Yep.
Kelly Jansen, obviously looking at some of the closers out there. Jansen got one. I wasn't really surprised by that. Dexter Fowler getting one. And Zach and I talked about this one yesterday, Patrick. What's your feeling on that? Because his contract was kind of complicated where his option was like $8 million, and then there's like a buyout for $5 million, and then now basically the Cubs are saying, here's $17.2 million. Would you like to stay here?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because the Cubs apparently create such a good environment for those players over there that they just love playing in Chicago. And you saw that with Fowler last year, obviously. But he had a really good season. I know he was injured for a little bit of it, but I would have to think he's going to try and cash in. It looks like, I think, second best OPS of his career. Good glove in center field. I'd be surprised at 30 years old if he doesn't try to cash in and not take that qualifying offer. The offer to Jansen is just it's just to show that the Dodgers made a good faith effort, not even that, to try and keep Kenley Jansen. It's like the Mets offering, the qualifying offer to Cespedes. He's not taking it.
Right.
But it is nice that they threw it out there, I guess.
Do you think Batista might take it? I was surprised that they offered it to Batista, in my opinion.
No, just because of the all of the acrimony surrounding that contract situation, like there was, it's, you know, I'm not giving them a hometown discount, and I don't think there's any way that he backs down and says, you know what, I'll take QO, because he's, I mean, this is his last chance for a multi-year deal, really. And he was banged up most of the year, but he's still Jose Bautista, and he still profiles as a guy who hits 35, 40 home runs for your team. He's going somewhere else. I'd be shocked if he didn't. I think they're probably looking at Encarnacion, and they're going to try and make a deal with him and just kind of let Bautista go on his way.
I was not surprised to see Jose Bautista offered one. Actually, looking at this list now, so it's Trumbo, Helixson, Cespedes, Neil Walker, Edwin Encarnacion, Jose Bautista, Ian Desmond, Dexter Fowler, Kenley Jansen, and Justin Turner. I feel like we've gotten to the point now where, you know, you might have seen a couple guys, talking about Weider specifically, on this list had it been a couple years ago before guys, you know, even accepted the qualifying offer. Now teams, I think, are a little more cautious with who they hand this out to. You know, it was valued at $15.8 million a season ago, and continues to rise up to 17.2 at this point. So teams are a little more careful with the guys that they're selecting to hand the qualifying offer out to. So not a ton of surprises here on this list for me. Something that is a little bit of a surprise is I always love this time of year jumping over to MLB Trade Rumors and checking out their top 50 MLB free agents with predictions, as opposed to that, especially when I was working for MLB Network Radio, that was something that like I relied on pretty much all offseason. And seeing the predictions for the two big Orioles free agents, I think, is something we got to talk about. Mark Trumbo is predicted to get a 4-year $60 million deal, which to me sounds about right. The prediction that was made that, you know, was something I'm not sure I necessarily agree with is that they are predicting that it's going to come from the Orioles. Would you be shocked, Patrick, to see Mark Trumbo back in a Baltimore uniform for 4 more years at $60 million next year?
I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, obviously the defense is questionable if you're being nice, but he fits. I mean, he fits in a small park surrounded by a team that hits pretty well. I mean, it's not like he fits better too many other places. He's probably most valuable as a bat in a park like Camden Yards. 4 years, $60 million does seem about right to me for Trumbo. I think obviously he had a great first half. But it showed you what a healthy Trumbo can do, and that, you know, the batting average and the strikeouts are going to be a little bit down, but you're getting him to be a power hitter, and he was a great power hitter last year. So I'm not shocked by it. No, are you guys?
I can't be, because it was my wild card prediction in an MLB free agent show that Jab and I had last week, Jab?
Yep.
So I can't be totally shocked by it. And I wouldn't be shocked to see Trumbo back. I think a lot of Orioles fans have kind of, although you could say the same thing last year, a lot of Orioles fans have decided that the team is going to move on from a free agent that's going to command, you know, over $50 million, I think. So a lot of people want this offense to be, you know, a little more well-rounded, want some better defense out in the corner outfield positions. But I just go back, Jab, to thinking about Dan Duquette during, you know, after the playoffs, talking about how it's hard to defend on the opposite side of the wall, right? And that's the way they've built their teams for the past few years. And
yep.
Why would they change now?
Well, it's funny, too. Last year was also the offseason where Dan came out and said, we're going to upgrade our starting pitching come hell or high water. That's what we're going to do. We're going to go out and get pitching and pitching and pitching. And then they went out and didn't really get any pitchers, unless you consider Gallardo an upgrade to the rotation. I think didn't Nelson get about that, by the way, after Nelson left from here? And his numbers, I think, compare pretty strongly with what Trumbo did this past offseason or this past season for the Orioles. And I think Nelson's deal was right around that number as well, right?
Yeah, he got 4.
And that was a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So I think that's about the same thing. Now, let's remember Nelson, who has performed. Nelson has performed since he's been out there, but you and I talked about it, Zach, and probably Patrick too. the back end of that deal is what we were more worried about, right? The last 2 years of that contract. Now he's going into the third year of the deal. Looks like he's still going to be okay. He's going to be 40. I think he's going to be either 30. It's either 38 or 40 when he gets to that that final year of that deal for Nelson. Here with Mark, you're getting Mark here at, you know, a four. If you're going to do a 4 year deal, he's just turning 30. He loves the ballpark. Seems to really like hitting in between some of the guys. That, I mean. How hard is it to hit in between Machado and Davis? I mean, that's a pretty good – you're protected pretty well there. You got guys getting on base in front of you. I think if they can do some the business in this offseason and grab somebody else to play the outfield so Mark doesn't have to play the outfield the whole time and actually just become pretty much your DH, maybe once a week play the outfield here, I think it would be fine to bring him back. I don't see it happening. I don't see the Orioles – I think the Orioles are going to do this with him, and this is my opinion. I think the Orioles are going to wait and see how the market plays out, kind of like they did with Chris last year, remember? Because they were waiting on Chris, and no, all these phantom deals came out from all these different teams, and there wasn't the interest that everybody thought there was going to be. I think with Mark, there's going to be a little bit more interest because the deal's not going to be as high. I mean, it's double what you know Chris made before, so I think Mark's going to garner a lot more interest, but in this market, I don't think you're going to see these big deals. I think besides Cespedes, I don't see some monster deal coming out for some of these guys, at least on you know the offensive side.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a shallow free agent market in terms of, I mean, offense partially, but really starting pitching. Like starting pitching free agent market is really, really thin.
Jeremy Hellickson is your best.
He's their number one, yeah.
On and he might take the qualifying offer. He really might. I mean, how much better could, like, he might get an extra year or so out of a contract, but he strikes me as a possible qualifying.
Remember when the Phillies didn't trade Jeremy Hellickson?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The hell?
Yeah. I don't understand.
I don't either.
But you look past Trumbo, and I mean, you could possibly go after Edwin, but it's a slight offensive upgrade, I would think. But he can't play. He really can't play defense. He doesn't want to, right?
Yeah. The other, do you notice here who they have linked to the Orioles at number eight? Number 20, Zach, on your list there, if you're looking at it.
Number 20. Oh, your guy, Michael Saunders.
Michael Saunders, three-year, $33 million deal. That's a nice Oriole-type deal there.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
He can play some defense. He had a great first half.
He likes hitting in Camden Yards, that's for sure.
Only thing I worry about with Michael Saunders is, outside of last year, that dude has been about as injury prone as you can possibly get.
Correct.
He's hurt every year. But yeah, the talent has always been there.
He kills us too.
Made the All-Star team last year. I wouldn't want any longer than 3. Yeah, 3 years is about the sweet spot of how long I'd want to commit to Michael Saunders. Yeah, and if I could make it shorter and add a little bit of money and go 2 years, that's what I would do.
Yeah, maybe two and an option. I know the Orioles are really big into options and buyouts and things of that nature.
Yeah, they love their own business like it was done Zach, 10 years ago.
What about your guy Josh Reddick here at 3 years getting $36 million based on their trade rumors here from the Gigantes? You talked about liking him. You think a little bounce back type thing would fit really well in the Orioles as well?
Yeah, I do. You know, like everybody else on this list, it's a prediction. I haven't seen any possible news about the Orioles being tied to Josh Reddick, but when we were doing a draft that had nothing to do with, you know, staying to a budget.
Well, I think they listen to that?
Well, when we didn't have a budget, I'd sign Josh Reddick and just about every other corner outfielder, you know, who I think would be an upgrade to the Orioles. Yep. I drafted them. So
you had Cespedes, you had Fowler. I mean, his team was a fantasy hero team, by the way.
It was Patrick. Nothing but corner outfielders. Yeah,
all the good ones. And Zach was spending some of that Mickey Mouse money too. It sounds like
Matt Wieters going to the Braves. Big surprise, according to this list. Yeah,
heard that for years. Yeah.
Yep, we've all been waiting for that to happen. 3 years, $39 million is their prediction to sign with Atlanta. So. I don't know. I mean, I guess if the Orioles are going to re-sign one of these guys, I still feel like, are they really done with Wieters? Like, don't you think they'd rather re-sign Wieters than Trumbo just because of looking at what they have at catcher, which is nothing? I mean, unless you want to hand the job over to Caleb Joseph.
I wouldn't consider Wieters gone by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
That's basically what I'm saying. I think there was a lot of rhetoric coming out to people saying, well, obviously the Orioles don't want Matt Wieters back because they said they were afraid he was going to take the qualifying offer, which kind of makes it sound like, oh, we're really not interested. We don't want to bring this back. That's kind of not the case. He's not worth $17.2 million again. And from what they heard, he wanted to take that. And as watered down as the catching, especially with what Patrick talked about, Ramos being out, I mean, he's far and away the top catching prospect or top catching free agent out there, Zach. And I'll just say this, Matt Wieters enjoys playing in Baltimore, really enjoys playing for Buck, and was really liked within that clubhouse. That's not going to say that doesn't matter when it comes to dollars and cents, and obviously Scott Boras is going to have something to do with that. But I'll just say this, I don't think Matt Wieters is completely done as an Oriole.
Yeah, I sort of feel the way Patrick feels about Cespedes. Like, until Wieters signs with somebody else and I see him put on a Braves hat or whatever in that press conference, I don't know. I'm kind of not going to believe it, right? It's not maybe that's just I'm like completely underselling the market there for Matt Wieters, and I understand the catcher's market overall, so that's a possibility, but I don't know. And when you look at the Orioles options behind him, I just have a hard time thinking that, you know, the Orioles aren't at least going to be in the market to retain Wieters.
You don't think Chance Sisko's getting everybody fired up on the fourth floor of the warehouse?
I think Chance Sisko's getting Twitter fired up, but I'm not quite sure why. And it's those four games above Double A that people are just pumped about.
Yeah. From the people I talk to, too, with him, it's either make or break with him. He's getting to an age where it's almost like the Mancini kind of type situation, Zach. It's like, all right, is this guy going to make the push? Are they going to give him the opportunity? Or is he going to get packaged in a deal and sent elsewhere in a trade? Because they
like
have to
22?
Figure out the guy's bit. It's not like this guy's that young.
He's,
I think, 22. He's a little older than that.
No, he's 21.
Is that?
He's 21.
He's 21.
Yeah, he turns 22 okay. In February.
All right. Let's bring him up and see what he can do. I just don't think anybody that's hit above Double A is all of a sudden going to come in and just start sharing the catching duties with a guy and Caleb Joseph.
I don't either, but I'm RBI. Not ready to write off a 21-year-old at the same time.
No, but are you ready to hand the keys to him?
Absolutely not, no. Which is why I think the Orioles are in the Wieters market for sure.
Wieters market, the Hundley market, just maybe a stopgap if you really think Cisco's there, maybe bring in Hundley.
Market.
Yeah. That kind of thing, Iannetta, something along those lines, if they can't come together with Matt. Because after all the arbitrations, Patrick, and after everything, if Matt, since he didn't accept the qualifying offer or wasn't offered the qualifying offer, there's a round, with all the arbitrations out of the way, there's around $7 million below what the payroll was last year. I can't anticipate Mr. Angelos going up that much higher in the payroll, so maybe $7 to $10 million that the Orioles will quote-unquote have to spend. I don't know what you're going to get for that kind of price. It kind of screams to me a little bit more of Gallardo again.
Ugh.
I know. But I'm just saying, that's if you're going to work in that financial constraints, then that's what you're going to back yourself into. And you have to go way down on this list to find somebody that is going to take something along those lines.
It's the Orioles don't have much to trade, but I feel like this winter could really be more of a trade-heavy offseason than we've seen recently, because the free agent market is so thin. You could see some trades of some bigger name guys around the winter meetings. So we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Probably the biggest surprise that occurred yesterday had nothing to do with free agency at all, and that was the BBWAA releasing their finalists specifically for the AL Cy Young Award voting. I'm gonna read the three finalists in the American League. We'll find out 8 days from now, on November 16th, who won among Corey Kluber of the Indians, Rick Porcello of the Red Sox, and Justin Verlander of the Tigers. Notably absent from that list was the best relief pitcher of the year, a guy that many of us thought would win this freaking thing. And that was Zach Britton. How did Zach Britton get overlooked? I didn't think Zach Britton was going to win this award, Jeb. I didn't. Straight up, I didn't think. I thought that, you know, the writers wouldn't allow a relief pitcher to vote. But there's no way I thought that he was going to finish out of the top three. No way.
I'm with you on this one. I kind of want to get the perspective of somebody outside of, you know, the orange colored glasses that we talk about every day on this show. But to your point, absolutely. I was completely shocked that he wasn't at least on the ballot. If you're in the conversation for Cy Young all year long and people are writing articles and getting hot clicks everywhere about, you know, whether or not you think a reliever should get it or not, you should at least be in the finals. I understand those other guys. I'm not taking away from anything with those other guys there. Some other people came out, and if you're really against a reliever being in there, you know, Chris Sale could have been in the mix or some other ones in there. I all along thought that Rick Porcello probably will end up winning it just because the team won the division. He pitched down the stretch really well, Patrick, and I think in the end, if you're going to give it to a starting pitcher, I don't think he's the best pitcher in this group, but I think he had the best year. But from a quote-unquote outsider's view here and being up there in the mothership, what was the vibe up there? Were you guys surprised? Were some of your colleagues surprised by that?
I was off work yesterday, so I can't really tell you. But I can tell you what I felt. I was surprised. I was surprised that he was left out. I think it's almost like a DH having a really good year. A DH honestly having a really good career and then saying, well, he can't be in the Hall of Fame because he's a DH. It is a position in baseball. He's a pitcher. Zach Britton is a pitcher. I understand it's a really high bar to clear to kind of get considered for these awards. But Zach Britton just set the bar at a height that I don't think anybody else is going to get to. This is the best season for a reliever that I've ever seen. And if you're not going to nominate Britton for the award this year, then just put a rider on the award that just says relievers are ineligible for the award. Because
right.
That's what this means. Yeah. That is 100% what this means. Yep. There are three very average candidates for the award this year. It's really actually tough to separate all three of these guys. They're all pretty much the same, with the exception of Porcello having the 22 wins. We'll see how much weight that carries, but all of the rest of the numbers are, you know, each one has, you know, an advantage in one category, and then one will have an advantage in the other. Britton is an outside the box kind of guy because he's a closer, but it can't get better than the year he had. And if you're not going to nominate him, then just say closers can't win, because that's true. Then
I mean,
it can't get better than what Britton did, and you have to include him if you're gonna even pretend that a closer could win this award.
I completely agree. Yep, I'm completely on board. And you know, if all year long, I think part of the reason that Britton was in this conversation was not only because historically it was one of the best years ever for a relief pitcher, but also because, you know, the guys, the starters that could potentially win the Cy Young weren't incredibly impressive. Nobody like stood up as that clear Cy Young award winner in the American League. And in fact, I think a lot of people were having a hard time getting the three starting pitchers until really September, you know?
Yep.
I'm completely on board with Patrick. I know that they have the Mariano Rivera reward or whatever for a relief pitcher, and that's fine if that's what you want that award to be, and you don't want a relief pitcher to be eligible for the Cy Young. But make that clear, man, because this is just it's kind of shocking. It's kind of unbelievable, and I'm actually looking forward to the 16th rolling around, because the BBWAA releases who each writer voted for and in what order they voted for that writer. And man, I can't wait to see how these ballots looked and the guys that were eligible to vote for AL Cy Young, because it's kind of killing me now to see, you know, where he's going to finish and why he finished that way, and start reading these columns from these writers who, a lot of people, Jeb, throughout the year were talking about how, you know, Britton should be the guy, or at least on the ballot. And we're not that far removed from those columns. I don't know what happened.
I don't know, but I know that the skipper of the team wasn't too pleased last night as well. And I got some quotes from him, right directly from Masson here. This is from Munbunk Showalter. This guy had maybe the best year in the history of relief pitching. He should have finished in the top three in MVP, okay? He should. There's nobody in baseball who was more valuable to their team than Zach Britton is to the Orioles. Now, I understand there's a lot of hot takes and a lot of bad shtick about why didn't you pitch him in the wildcard game? That's totally, listen, if you've started with that, then that's fine. That's get your zing out. But if you look at what Zach did, 47-47, 0.54 ERA, didn't give up a run, I think, since like April. The guy was historic, and the Orioles would not even have been close to where they were at. And I think Buck brought up something good here as well. And I don't have the quote right here in front of me. It was something he talked about, how every night that the Orioles went into the clubhouse, they never had to go have one of those, you know, devastating losses, right? Every time that Zach came in the game, the Orioles went into the clubhouse pretty happy and music was being played and, you know, a hilarity ensued, I guess. I just think that it's kind of interesting that this happened and that it's shocking to a lot of people. The question I would have for you guys is Zach Britton's name not enough to get him on the ballot? If this was, say, a Mo Rivera back in his day, or let's say, you know, maybe, you know, go as far back as Eric Gagne and things of that nature, Zach had better years than both of those guys did, even in, you know, with Gagne that one year that he had 900 saves in a row. And he was up for MVP, I think. Is it a name thing with Zach Britton? People still don't know who he is a little bit. I know in baseball circles, and the writers should know who he is, Patrick, but I guess my question is, if it was somebody else with more of a cachet, more of a name, would he be on the ballot?
I think the only guy you can definitively say that about is Mariano Rivera.
Okay.
I don't think there's anybody else in baseball right now that you would be able to say that about. Even like the higher profile closers are like a Chapman or like a Jansen playing in bigger markets most of the year. But yeah, I think the only guy that you could maybe say that about would be Rivera. And the writers, I mean, you never know. There are some writers who just don't really watch teams outside their market anymore. It's unfortunate, but there are some guys that really just are kind of cavalier with how they cast their ballot. And I know that at least the writers by where I work were seriously considering, if not, you know, going as far as saying, you know, Britton was their candidate for Cy Young. So I'm interested, just like Zach is, to see how these ballots came out.
Yep, November 16th, we'll know, and the 109s can start tweeting their angry tweets to the writers for their ballots, because yes. We will have that information. I'm just shocked. This has got to be. I mean, the only answer I can think of is what Patrick said. This, you know, people digging in their heels and saying he's a reliever. He didn't pitch 200 innings. How could he be a Cy Young Award winner? I'm with Patrick in that if that's the case, then make the Cy Young Award the starting pitcher award. Let's not act like it's anything else, you know?
Yep. That's basically what they're saying.
Another pleasant surprise was the manager of the year finalist and one Buck Showalter joining Terry Francona and Jeff Banister Jab in the AL column as a finalist for manager of the year.
You put it great in the same article that I got it. They talk about the reason why you're manager of the year is why would you get manager of the year? It's because your expectations for your team was low and you're able to rise them and have them get to a spot, right?
It's like the story of the Orioles.
That's the story of the Orioles since him and Dan have been here with the Orioles. I mean, the expectations from Pagoda and some of the other quote-unquote experts before the season have never had the Orioles in the mix in first place, never had the Orioles over around 81 and a half games Vegas-wise, and they continue to, you know, surpass those expectations. So I think that's more of what he's saying. He's saying that's because we got in a position, if the Orioles had expectations of winning the division and then they came up short in a wild card game, I'm not sure he would be on here. But this award, I think, should be the most runaway award out there. And you know how I feel about Buck Showalter, guys, but I think this award should go to Terry Francona. Even they don't even need to really do the balloting. The guy took Cleveland Indians to within a, you know, although they lost it in a 3-1, but within a game of winning the World Series for a team that, you know, before the season they had some quote-unquote expectation. I think they were more of a quote-unquote sexy pick from people, don't you think? I think it was more like, oh, well, this surprise team could be the Indians. They're kind of getting it together. But what he did with that pitching staff, and especially with what he did down the stretch, Patrick, with that pitching staff and having those starters and be able to maneuver it just to get into the playoffs. And then finally I think, and I know they already set the award before this, but to basically just boat race the Boston Red Sox, the perennial favorite in the AL before the playoffs started, I think shows a little bit towards what he can do as well. And I think that as long as Francona is on the bench for the Indians, as long as they continue to do stuff, I think they're going to be in the mix like the Orioles year after year.
Yeah. I mean, it all really depends when these ballots were cast because, yeah, Tito got them to the World Series. I think that's fantastic. I don't know if these ballots were cast after the regular season because then I think that honestly brings Banister into the conversation. I really do. I think it's between the two of them. I think Francona had a great year. I think if you look at the Indians and the Rangers, I mean, obviously, we're all a little dubious on run differential here, but if you do believe in it, Rangers plus +8, Indians plus +101. Depends how much stock you put in that. But, you know, the Rangers did finish with almost exactly the same record, one more win than the Indians. They did have, you know, pitching problems of their own coming down the stretch. They were kind of unhealthy in their rotation all year. They started off without Darvish. They lost Kobe Lewis. it was impressive to see the Rangers. I mean, however much stock you put in it, they were unbelievable in one-run games. So I think if it does include any modicum of the postseason, it's clearly Francona's award to win. But if you go to regular season, it gets a little more interesting. I would still give it to Francona, but I think Bannister is going to get some votes there.
Yep. Totally agree.
Can see that.
Well, that's where we're at. And it was like an exciting day of baseball offseason news, man. We had qualifying offers. We had some award finalists. We're starting to see options get picked up, denied, all that kind of fun stuff. So
the stove's getting warm, Zach.
It is getting warm. I know. It gets warm. It cools. It gets warm. It cools. You know, it's a very inconsistent fire, that hot stove. So
I love it, though. And for this show, it's fantastic for us. As much as we like the day-to-day grind of the season, we miss actually 7 o'clock and turning on our TV to watch the games. For nerds like us, seam heads, as the kids would call us, this is like, I mean, a full-blown circus for me. I love the trade rumors. I love trying to figure out how you're going to put this whole thing together and how they're going to be look when they get down to Sarasota in in early February.
Yeah, absolutely. I know it's a lot to look forward to, and an interesting off season. Obviously, a weak market, so it'll be an interesting off season for all teams. So look, very curious to see how the trade market is actually going to look given the weakness of the free agent market. So that'll be fascinating to watch.
I'm totally with Patrick too. I think there's going to be more trades this off season than the free agent. I think it's going to be hotter trades than it will be in the free agent side.
Yeah, I think it's going to have to be for certain teams to improve. So, yep. And for the Orioles, a couple holes for them to fill, but you know, compared to the way it was last year, not a ton. I'd be curious to see if we start seeing some extensions for some guys on this team. So that'll be a storyline that we'll keep track of. And of course, be with you here every day on Baltimore Sports Today to grumble and groan and talk positively about some of that stuff too, if it makes us happy. Patrick Guthrie, it makes us happy to have you back. It's good talking to you, my friend.
Looking forward to talking when the Mets sign Cespedes and all of the other moves that go on during this off season.
Absolutely. And Jabby Burns, I know you're looking forward to talking about when the Mets sign Cespedes too. Good talking to you as well.
I'm a Mets guy via our boy Patrick. I like it. I like the Mets a little bit, so I'm hoping for that. I'm actually more hoping for his squad, his injured arms to get healthy. That's what I would like to see, because that team is based on arms, if anything else. So also want to see what Cespedes, if he gets this big deal, I want to see what the next 9 cars he drives into the parking lot. That's the kind of thing.
Oh, they'll be so nice.
Oh, so great.
Yeah, when he's making over 100 mil, you got to expect that the cars are going to be pretty solid. So that'll be fun. See what he rolls up in hopefully Mets spring training there, Patrick. That's what I'm looking forward to. All right, for Patrick Guthrie and Jabby Burns, I'm Zach Will. Thanks for listening to Baltimore Sports Today. Enjoy your Tuesday. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.